For over 33 years, CIUT-FM has delivered the sound and the news of your city. We could not have done this without you. CIUT is still here during these pandemic times, but we do need your financial support. Please show your support by donating now. Love your radio and visit CIUT.FM and help keep us strong and healthy. Thank you in advance from all of our volunteers and staff.
CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
And welcome to the Taylor Report again. This is Phil Taylor. It is, of course, CIUT 89.5 FM. Please feel free at any time to go to CIUT.FM and donate. Keep this great station going, and at a time everybody's fighting the pandemic, CIUT is doing its part and is producing a lot of great fresh programming. And of course, with people being more at home, I think they no doubt appreciate it. I want to continue a theme. Probably every segment I want to say that we have to argue strongly against themes that are being set by our mass media, such as new Cold War with China, the adversarial approach taken by Donald Trump, and of course following that on the new Cold War, the continuing sanctions against developing countries and countries that refuse to conform to the U.S. dictated model. Venezuela, Syria, Cuba, Zimbabwe, North Korea, Syria. Did I already say Syria? It's very important that we make a clear line between what the mass of the population of Canada wants to be part of the world and to live as equals, Canada as an equal with other states, and of course the Canadian people in equal status and mutual respect with other peoples. That is not what Fortress America wants. They want Cold War. And I don't know, cold is a kind of an odd qualifier. It's at all time the U.S. has been maintaining, since the end of World War II, it is the Lord and the Master. Sometimes it says it coldly and bloodily that way. And it's very important that particularly in independent radio, alternative voices that are not dictated by monopolies and big corporations and people who walk back and forth between the Canadian government and media. And we don't accept the idea that it's automatic that there'd be a Cold War. I'm sorry that the Canadian Parliament is so deathly silent on this issue, never debating it, always voting along, always 100%. And for example, when the Lima game started being played by Chrystia Freeland and others to double down on action against the democratic government of Venezuela, and I say that very clearly, the democratic government of Venezuela, member of the United Nations, sovereign country. The decision was made by the Five Eyes gang, the Europeans, but to say, oh, that's not a democracy. Well, it's as much a democracy as this one, as Canada, and you can debate all day long. The fact is, it's a sovereign country. It does have a democratic government, it has an opposition, and for some reason it was decided in collaboration with the State Department to form a gang called the Lima Group and the Organization of American States, I think that's its name, states of this hemisphere. They decided to form a caucus or a faction called Lima, and that faction has been working to undermine and destroy the government of Venezuela. And of course, it sanctions. And this is at a time of the corona pandemic that they're calling for sanctions. So this is going to be something at every segment I believe we should talk about on the Taylor Report. We're against the new Cold War, and we're against sanctions. And in line with this, it's very important to keep track of propaganda. We're in a kind of a bubble, and that's unfortunate. But we, of course, at CIUT, we fight, some of us, the programmers, try to bring out other points of view than those approved by NATO or by the gang led by the United States, the UK, New Zealand, Australia, and Canada called Five Eyes. I like that name, and so I keep repeating it, Five Eyes. This is the group which is an exclusive group. You have to be English-speaking. You have to be part of the British Empire, with its, of course, I say it advisedly, the prodigal son, America, leading that group. But they constitute an information bubble, and we have to fight back against it. So I think it's a useful service, and I try to do it with the Taylor Report, to call to attention the response of countries that come under attack from the U.S. policy of hegemony, and to get information straight. If only just to say that every time the U.S. and State Department or the Canadian Foreign Affairs spokesperson says something, it ain't gospel. Other countries have a point of view, and all other countries. I don't just mean, I'm not just talking about those who've been the victims of sanctions or of Russia or China. All countries have spokesperson, and you're not in a dialogue that can produce any result if they're not allowed to speak and be heard. So that you can contemplate, well, they said this and we said that. So, to help along on that point, I noticed that the Globe and Mail has been saying lately that China is, now it has problems, according to the Globe and Mail. China is getting pushback all over the world. And I read closely, and it turns out that the world, once again, is this... they mean by that West Europeans of a certain type. But in the article, they say things like some African countries or Africans are unhappy with China because there was an incident. That actually isn't so. That's their wishful thinking. They do say it, and they, of course, don't contradict themselves. They just go ahead and say it. So I want to read something here from the Chinese Foreign Ministry. I believe people should go to that Foreign Ministry site and see what they have to say. But here's a question to put to the Foreign Ministry. And it says, we notice that Chinese medical teams on COVID-19 to Ethiopia and Djibouti have accomplished their mission and returned to China on May 12. Can you give us more details? Answer. Team of medical experts to Ethiopia and Djibouti was one of the first groups of COVID-19 experts sent by Chinese government to Africa. The experts arrived in Ethiopia on April 16, have traveled to Djibouti on April 30. In the past month or so, they shared anti-epidemic experience and know-how, and WHO officials in the African Union, the Africa Center for Disease Control, and local medical institutions and health officials. The experts visited designated hospitals, quarantine centers, and testing centers, discussed the epidemics with local medical workers, and made calibrated propositions for containment and treatment. Their dedication and professionalism has been highly commended by the African side. On May 10, Djiboutian Prime Minister Kamel Mohamed, awarded the Independence Day Medal of the Republic of Djibouti to the 12 members of the expert team from their contributions to the country. After the COVID-19 pandemic broke out in China, China sent 5 medical teams to Africa and held nearly 30 video conferences with African countries. The more than 40 medical teams already working in Africa also took active action, carrying out about 400 training activities to share anti-epidemic experience and provided training to over 20,000 local medical workers. These numbers vividly demonstrate a closer China-Africa community with a shared future. China will continue standing firm with our African brothers and supporting their efforts to fight COVID-19 for the final victory against the virus. I want to point out something, by the way. If you go to, there is a Chinese network, CGTN, if I get that right. I watch their coverage. I know it's forbidden. I know that the Globe would come wanting to know why I'm doing that. But it's a news outlet. And I notice one thing is that I only look at it occasionally, but I try to kind of keep up because I very much want to know what they're saying. Again, it's really not approved of that you'd be interested in the point of view of other countries and what they have to say. And that's why we have a media to tell us what those other countries are thinking and why we don't like them. But at any rate, I went to CGT on my own. One thing I noticed is that often when I turn it on, when I look at it, they have a lot of reports from Africa. The reports are made by Africans. And they spend a lot of time wandering around in places which I once visited myself and which I always enjoy looking at, just because I like being there and I like the people that I met, Kenya, Tanzania, such places. But the reporters are African. And commentators are African, the hosts are African. By the way, many times when they're reporting on Europe, the hosts are African, I notice. This is CGTN and I'm talking about. That's aside from what the content is, I'm just pointing that out. Something that I don't actually get when I watch BBC, CBC, CBS, NBC. They actually pretty much dried up in reporting the rest of the world. They watch the Punch and Judy Donald Trump show, which somebody trying to figure it out would only scratch their heads when they watch that. Now back to this point, answering issues. The Globe and Mail says China is getting pushback around the world. What they mean is the editorial offices, the Globe, they're averaging now 6 days a week an anti-China article, which tells you they are in the propaganda business. They want to produce a headline and something negative every day that they publish. So if you work for them, that's what you're gonna do. That's just the way they work. It's called propaganda, and I don't mind, but let's just face it, that's what it is. So they said the world is pushing back. Well, okay, well, so here's another question to the Chinese Foreign Ministry. According to reports, China and Caribbean countries with diplomatic relations with it held a special vice foreign minister's video conference on COVID-19 yesterday. What does China think of the outcome of this meeting with the pandemic still, does the Globe know this happened? Anyway, with the pandemic still wreaking havoc around the world, how does China plan to offer more support and assistance the Caribbean states, whose national public health systems are relatively fragile. Answer: yesterday, China and the Caribbean countries, having diplomatic relations with it, held a special vice foreign ministers meeting on COVID-19 via video link. Delegates from China and 9 Caribbean states attended the virtual meeting, co-hosted by the vice foreign minister and the foreign minister, and the foreign minister of the Commonwealth of Dominica. They held in-depth exchange over issues including domestic COVID-19 situation and response, China-Caribbean cooperation in fighting the pandemic, and the two sides' coordination and cooperation in international affairs reaching wide consensus. This was an important meeting between China and Caribbean countries at a crucial juncture in the global fight against COVID-19. All sides, expressed readiness to enhance cooperation in prevention and control and jointly uphold global health security. The Caribbean side also expressed objection to politicizing, stigmatizing, and labeling practices under the pretext of the pandemic, and support the World Health Organization's leading role in the global response. Does the Globe know about this? Did they share that? No. Did the Toronto Star share that? No. Did the CBC share that? No. The Caribbean side expressed objection to politicizing, stigmatizing, and labeling practices under the pretext of the pandemic and support the WHO's leading role in the global response. That's kind of an important story. You're getting it on the Taylor Report. You listen to CIUT. This is the one place you're going to get it. I don't think you're going to hear that anywhere else, but it happens to be what was said by one of the greatest powers reporting news. This is where, of a conference, the Caribbean countries in China. It doesn't sound like a lot of pushback at Globe and Mail. Doesn't sound like they're really unhappy. As a matter of fact, they seem to be unhappy with you. Continuing, Caribbean countries reiterated their commitment to the One China principle and to mutual assistance with China on matters concerning each other's core interests and major concerns. Ooh, they committed to the One China principle. That's very interesting. Again, the Globe didn't share that with its readers. You're not to know that. And don't you be listening to the Taylor Report. You might find it out. Continuing, China fully appreciates this. China and the Caribbean countries have been supporting and assisting each other in the fight against COVID-19, adding a new chapter to China-Caribbean friendship. This virtual conference served to steer the two sides' next stage cooperation in fighting the pandemic. Going forward, China will continue to firmly support the Caribbean side's efforts against COVID-19, share our containment experience and treatment solutions, offer material and technical assistance, and facilitate foreign purchase of medical materials in China. Meanwhile, we will actively expand all-round practical cooperation with the Caribbean countries in areas like trade and investment, and strengthen communication and coordination in international and regional organizations to elevate relations to a new level. The pandemic will pass eventually, but what China and the Caribbean countries have is an enduring relationship. The friendship and cooperation between the two sides after the test of this pandemic will emerge stronger and more profound. See, that's interesting, isn't it? Caribbean countries, they're cooperating, and the vice ministers had a conference. and they expressed themselves on a subject dear to the heart of the Canadian government and the Australian government and the UK government and the American government and the French government, that they want to start talking about responsibility for the pandemic. And the Caribbean countries say they don't agree with that, and they don't like the stigmatizing and labeling practices under the pretense of pandemic. And also, let's remember, Donald Trump, our leader, has decided to attack the World Health Organization and to call for investigations of the source. And of course, we all know what he wants to stigmatize China. He wants to create as much havoc as he can at a time of pandemic. So the Caribbean countries are saying, we don't agree with that. But Canada agrees with it. Canada also wants, and what do they want to make the core of this? They want to talk about Taiwan. Actually, Taiwan, according to the record, is doing quite well in the fight against the pandemic. So why is that a burning issue? Well, because Five Eyes, Australia, and New Zealand now, and Canada, have decided to take the assignment given to them by none other than the Donald himself, who is the boss, who runs Canadian foreign policy, who loved the idea of overthrowing Maduro. So, of course, Chrystia Freeland loved the idea of overthrowing Maduro. Although they said, oh, we don't believe in violence, you know, we don't want to see any violence. Now we have Guaido's signature on a document to overthrow the government of Guaido's, pardon me, I call him Guaido. He's a traitor, whatever else. At any rate, he wants to, his name is on.
CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
And continuing with the Taylor Report, I apologize if there was a glitch in our recording. I'm my own technician, which means to say I can't get good help. I'm producing from home, and there will always be glitches. I was talking about the issue of following Donald Trump's policies, in this case, the matter of issues with Taiwan and the World Health Organization, and but also implementing U.S. policies on Venezuela. These are all bad direction for Canada to go. Goes against the thesis that I have, which is we do not want, we cannot have, and should be opposed to any idea of a new Cold War. That is utter madness. And that we should not be putting sanctions on anyone. This is a time for world cooperation, not only because of the pandemic, but just generally, if we're going to have a healthy world economy, economies in the world, it can't belong to one number one indispensable country, or the only country, etc., Trump land or Obama land. That is the wrong path. Actually, I would characterize American policies as being the behavior of someone who is losing at cards, who came into the room claiming to be the sharpest card player ever, and suddenly find themselves not doing so well, and their response is to kick over the table and to begin to misbehave. The U.S. acts very much like a losing gambler, and now they want to change all the rules. Every day you get up and Trump has new rules. But the problem is for us is that Canada is following along, as are Australia, New Zealand, UK, all being part of the network that is hanging together and is causing a lot of problems in the world, actually. And we were speaking of this thing, this agreement that they have struck, which is the man who kicks over the table, the man who because he can't handle a health crisis, because there is no health system in the U.S., and there's barely one in Britain. Number two in deaths is to Corona 19 is the U.K. And because they have made such a criminal mess of the place, with U.S. with 80,000 and climbing, 80,000 dead, they have to try to offload the blame. Their problem is that, of course, that there is a World Health Organization, which is part of the United Nations. So, and the World Health Organization, of which the United States is a member, been paying a lot of money toward it, but it does share information and science and medical knowledge. So, World Health Organization has been keeping track of things, and that the U.S. has to control the narrative. Therefore, they have to attack the WHO. They want to attack the WHO because they want to get at China. And the rest of the world, which makes up the WHO, doesn't agree, which is why it's so egregious that Canada's going along with Trump. This is always the embarrassing part. All across Canada, there is a uniform agreement. Even all the editors agree, and all the cartoonists agree, that there's something about this guy Trump with his funny hat and his peculiar behavior, outrageousness, etc. However, when the chips are down, they do what he wants them to do. And they've all agreed that they're going to attack the WHO. And they're going to try to make Taiwan a big issue. Taiwan is part of China. That's the whole agreement between the United States and Canada, UK, Taiwan. There's one China. Now, Taiwan defines itself, according to its official name, as China. Well, there's been an agreement that China is represented, of course, by the government in Beijing. It's a member of the Security Council. But because they are getting desperate, the Globe writes like a very desperate yellow journal propaganda thing, desperate to command the world and claim they're in charge and that they get to set all the agendas, they're starting to act desperately. They're imitating Trump. When he kicks over the table, they all run and find a table to kick over. It's helping tear up international institutions, ignoring international law, not behaving like diplomats and following the path of diplomacy, but instead getting more and more noisy and more outrageous. Now, one element of this that I want to call attention to came up, and again, I'm pointing out that we have to listen to everybody the way you would if you actually cared about trying to persuade you, those who don't agree with you, or to better understand the one you do. You have to listen to them. But our media doesn't do that. Taylor Report does it. That's why you're listening to Taylor Report, I assume. 89.5 FM. Donate anytime. CIUT.FM. Donate. So, oddly enough, at a press conference on Wednesday, and the foreign ministry holds these 5 days a week. You can find it online. I'm not going to tell you how. I know you're very diligent and capable of doing it yourself. But it turns out the Globe and Mail asked the question of the foreign ministry. He must have done it off stage, because the Chinese spokesperson for the foreign ministry just picked it up as this. The Globe and Mail asked me yesterday about the number of foreign journalists in China who have been given residence permits or press cards with a validity period of less than 12 months. Now, the reason, by the way, I want to put the background to this. I'm interrupting the Chinese ministry's statement. But the U.S. has started a little drumbeat about how China's being tough on foreign correspondents. The story was that Washington Post 3 months ago said China is a sick man, headline, sick man of Asia. Well, of course, now 1.4 million population, less than 5,000 deceased as a result of COVID-19. We have the United States, 350 million or so, and they have more than 80,000 dead. So who's the sick man? Washington Post do a story, America is the sick man of the West? No. But they, so the Washington Post got in trouble for that. China was very unhappy, I don't blame them. They never got an apology because, of course, when it's the imperialist press, they never apologize for anything. They double down. But to continue, because this is an answer to, we're dealing with the issue now, who mistreats the journalists, other people's journalists. So the foreign ministry spokesman says, I checked on that. There are nearly 500 foreign journalists stationed in China, and about 98% of them have residence permits of press cards with a validity period of 12 months. In other words, only about 2% of foreign journalists in China have credentials valid for less than 12 months. China has been providing convenience and assistance for foreign journalists in our country. Their application for extension of press cards is usually handled within 10 working days. With valid credentials, American journalists can enter and exit China multiple times without the need to apply for new visas. In last year alone, U.S. journalists stationed in China made over 700 cross-border trips. For a while, the U.S. entrenched in Cold War mentality and ideological bias launched one round of suppression after another against Chinese media. The U.S. has been carrying out discriminatory policies on the Chinese journalists' visas. Journalists of other countries and regions can get multiple entry visas, while Chinese reporters can only get single entry ones, which obstructs them from returning to the U.S. after visiting their families back in China. Since 2018, the U.S. has indefinitely delayed approval and even denied application of visa for 30 U.S.-based Chinese journalists. When applying for visas, our reporters have to provide a lot of additional materials. In December 2018, it demanded a Chinese media organization's U.S. office to register as a foreign agent. In February 2020, the U.S. designated 5 Chinese media organizations in the U.S. as foreign missions and then placed a cap on the number of their staff, in effect expelling 60 Chinese journalists. Now it is resorting to discriminatory, restrictive visa measures, severely disrupting Chinese media's normal reporting in the U.S. and affecting bilateral people-to-people and cultural exchange. We deplore and oppose that. I'd also like to point out many errors in the U.S. Department of Homeland Security statement. It said nothing about the U.S. wantonly pressuring Chinese journalists and falsely claimed that in 2018, the PRC, People's Republic of China, effectively expelled Megha Rajagopalan, BuzzFeed News China bureau chief. The fact is that Ms. Rajagopalan came to China in March 2017 on a J2 visa. That's the visa she entered on, which only allows temporary stay, not as a resident journalist. So this means she shall leave when her visa expired. Let me stress this once again. China's fundamental state policy of opening up is and will remain unchanged. We welcome foreign media and journalists reporting in China, and we will continue providing them with convenience and assistance. What we oppose is ideological bias towards China, fake news in the name of press freedom and violation of professional ethics. I think it's important to know that the Chinese have said that, and to clarify this point of how the U.S. has handled matters so as to effectively remove 60 Chinese journalists simply by a bureaucratic decision of calling them a foreign mission. And we're talking about serious bigotry, by the way, behind all this. If I think everyone saw Trump being unhappy when a Chinese American or Asian American journalist asked him a question which he didn't like, and his answer was, and it did not have anything to do with China. His answer was, "Ask China," which is this kind of casual bigotry, the kind that people slough off and, you know, "I didn't say that," or "I didn't mean that." Yeah, well, they did. It's like Brian Adams, he knew what he was doing, not that he's very bright. But anyhow, this is the kind of issues that we need to know about, need the background on, because there's continually this crybaby thing, but Globe and Mail, New York Times, Washington Post, trying to pretend that they're somehow paragons of journalistic integrity, which is just a load of malarkey. And again, this is the Taylor Report, and it is CIUT 89.5 FM. There's something I want to make sure that we comment on today, and I feel remiss that we didn't talk about it earlier. And this is the passing of Dennis Goldberg, one of the great anti-apartheid fighters. He was 87, I believe, and he was at home again in South Africa. To just show you how propaganda is done here, the Globe and Mail did an obituary on him. The title was "Anti-Apartheid Crusader Stood Trial with Mandela." And they tell you that he was in the African National Congress. And it doesn't take them long before they say that he's in his last years, he was critical of some of the African National Congress leaders, so they made sure they got that in there. They had a follow-up, the Globe had a follow-up by someone who said, "Oh, I remember him." And what they remembered was that Barbara Fum had once asked him some questions when he got out. He was, I think, 22 years in prison, very ugly prison conditions, for opposing blatant, explicitly racial laws which denied the majority life as humans in South Africa. And so, but so the both stories played on, he was a nice guy, and that he'd been with Mandela. And but then they dropped in that he didn't like some of the current ANC people, and he was worried about corruption. So I'm glad they thought that was important to put in, so I'm going to put in what they left out. He was a lifelong member of the Communist Party of South Africa. Kind of important, because the Communist Party of South Africa was the first to call for the end of discrimination, racial discrimination, in South Africa, going all the way back to 1928. It was the Communist Party of South Africa that advocated majority rule, majority African country. And of course, they were imprisoned for that, locked up. Their papers were closed down. They didn't say here, by the way, that he was a pro-democracy fighter. The Globe has a title and a star and a CBC, and they get it from the United States. They borrow everything, and they do that so they won't get popped in the back of the head. But they go along with it. Call somebody pro-democracy. Like if there's a demonstration supporting the Queen of England in Hong Kong, they call that pro-democracy. They don't call Dennis Goldberg a champion of pro-democracy. They said he was against apartheid, but apparently that doesn't count for being pro-democracy. But they left out that important detail. Do you think it's easy for someone in a country committed after 1948 to raw, legalized American-style apartheid? Because, by the way, apartheid was already in 1948, that was an old American practice. America was legally segregated in 1948. When the South Africans went for it officially and openly, they were simply joining the United States, which practiced it. And all the American Senate and Congress thought that was fine until Black Americans began to resist. And incidentally, guess who was doing the playing leading part? Communist Party. And you had a similar reaction in the United States and South Africa. See, they said that the struggle for majority rule, that was you were an agent for a foreign power. And, you know, it took a lot of guts. Dennis Goldberg was a very brave individual, but of course he wasn't an individual. Most of the people arrested at the big moment when Nelson Mandela's long period of imprisonment began, it's called the Rivonia case, if I pronounce it right, 1963, I think I got it right. Close, anyhow. Most of those people were communists or supporters and builders of the Communist Party. And they were called agents of a foreign power. Dennis Goldberg deserves all the credit, and so does the Communist Party, for the role they played. He, to his dying day, he was a member of the South African Communist Party. Funny that Goldberg didn't mention. You know, the New York Times did at least say so in its obituary. It wasn't anxious to dwell on the matter. Something else they left out about Dennis Goldberg is that he was a sharp critic of Israeli practice of discrimination and brutalization of the Palestinian people, and he spoke out about it. He went to Israel after he left South Africa when he was released, and he was made persona non grata. He made to understand he really wasn't very welcome. He remained until his dying day a friend and advocate for the Palestinian cause. He wasn't against the Israelis. He was for democracy. He said, and the Globe didn't think it was important to mention, that he was, for him, it's the people that count, and that you do things for the people. And of course, it was only reasonable, any reasonable person would know, and if you're believing in equality, that you have to have majority rule in South Africa. But the price of that was, of course, many years of imprisonment. So that kind of thing ought to be mentioned, you know. I don't know that the Star mentioned, I doubt it. There is this tendency to always speak of South Africa, to talk about Mandela, forgetting that he was a very close friend, comrade of Fidel Castro and Muammar Gaddafi. He thanked both of them personally. He loved both of them, he said, personally. That isn't mentioned. They always have his picture with Obama or whoever they shipped in to have the picture taken with him. You remember Nelson Mandela visited Toronto, I think it was the Harris government. Everybody pretended they liked him. They actually, nobody tried to get him out of prison when he was in prison. They all supported apartheid until they realized they couldn't go on further with it. But so he came and they put him in the ballpark and drove him around in a limousine, him and his wife. And Mandela said to some reporter who wrote it down, and thank heavens reported it, he said, "I feel like the decoration on an automobile." That's exactly right. Because what he stood for wasn't embraced. It was a decision to try to put one face, one name, and we're all friends kind of phony story on it. Actually, the world stood by when he went to prison. He was called a terrorist, and Dennis Goldberg was there with him, and there were many accused, and the majority were members of the Communist Party of South Africa. So all credit to the Communist Party of South Africa for being in the leadership of that struggle and maintaining the struggle today in South Africa. This is to point out, which is why you listen to the Taylor Report, I suppose, is that details of that kind somehow neglected. On the point about people, I have a nice quote, putting the people first, and this is all apropos fighting the coronavirus, building a peaceful world. The other day, the president of Mexico, Obrador, he gives a press conference, by the way, every day himself. They're not like Trump's. Actually, he's a very literate man. He's a very respectful man. And he even tells the city, he has what he calls, this is funny to hear, he believes in Republican principles. By that he means the earliest concept of what a republic was, republic of equals, and in which wealth doesn't come first. And to underline that, President Obrador, in the middle of a statement, suddenly stopped and quoted a Mexican poet from Veracruz. His name is Salvador Diaz Mirón. And the line is, no one has a right to the superfluous until everyone has a right to the indispensable. Until everybody's fed, clothed, and secure, no one has a right to the superfluous. That's me paraphrasing the poet Salvador Diaz Mirón. President Obrador, by the way, went on to talk about that poet, and he said, later on in his life, he said this poet turned out to be moved to the right, just to show him he knows his poets. And he said, but as we forgive that, because the great poems are the great poems. So I think it's a point worth underlining. It's certainly what we're trying to do here, I believe, it's time to talk in time of pandemic and economic decline, or is it decline? Is that the word we want? It's certainly frightening times economically, and we are having an argument between what is best for the people and what is best for the rich, or what is best for the oligarchs. And the starting point should be the people. That's what Dennis Goldberg said. Ho Chi Minh said it. Ho Chi Minh, when he first developed the idea of, you know, in the struggle against Japan and then the struggle against France, he drafted a constitution. You know whose constitution they decided to borrow from? He borrowed from the United States. He borrowed the phrase, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and with certain rights, among these life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's time, with 80,000 dead, to ask Trump whether the Americans have the right to life. Apparently not, by the way. Oligarchs say it's time to go back to work, and the economy is more important than you are, which is an interesting message, but they think they're going to sell that. So I guess that's where the argument is. Whose country is it? Like the argument between Diego Rivera and Nelson Rockefeller. Diego Rivera was told to do a mural, to do a mural in Rockefeller Plaza. So he did a beautiful mural. And Diego, of course, loved the people, and Rockefeller pretended he did. But of course, in showing the beautiful people who do all the work, harvest the crops, build the cars, build the buildings, carry the heavy weight, the manual labors of the earth, without whom we have nothing. And so he painted them all. But he also, in his painting, included a famous figure from Russia, and Lenin. And Rockefeller came and looked at the finished product and he said, oh, wait a minute, that's Lenin, isn't it? And Diego says, yes. He said, well, you have to take that out. Yeah, I won't do it, said Rivera. So Rockefeller said, well, it's my wall. And Diego Rivera, according to the American poet, E.B. White, I think, said, we'll see if it is. That's where we are now. This is, we had this little experience, you know, the privatization, care for the elderly, see if we can give it over to private outfits and see if they can save a little money on the side and cut back and etc. Well, cutbacks cut throats. A lot of people die. So it's time to take it over. This has to belong to the people, because we're trying to protect. The people are the foundation of any society. I don't care who you are. The great mass of the population, and not inside the gated community, but the population is there. And ultimately, society should belong to them. And so, you know, Ho Chi Minh borrowed that and put that idea forward. Dennis Goldberg said that's got to be the foundation. Further to that, it's an argument. The United States is going to have this argument. Canada should have the argument. Of course, we can't dare use the word people. We're royal. We're subjects, you know. We have a royal family. That's all that counts. So long as, I guess, you keep them watertight, who needs the people? But on this idea, it was pointed out at the time, that's a very dangerous thing to say. It's not actually in the Constitution, it was in the Declaration of Independence. But it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, which would mean, of course, men and women. That's what the idea, once you say it, people look at each other and say, it's got to mean everybody, doesn't it? Yes. So, but of course they had slavery, and they had class contradictions. Whatnot. Time went by, and the American Civil War came, where they decided to fight to the death about slavery. 600,000 Americans died fighting over this idea. And I'm going to tell you, the idea was the people, because who remembers anything about the Civil War? Or let's put it this way, many things are remembered, but what is the most memorable? It is the Gettysburg Address. It's when Abraham Lincoln tried to explain what the war was about, and he said, he quoted, all men are created equal, and that was in the opening of the Gettysburg Address. I urge you to look it up. It'll make you stronger. I don't care where you live in the world. It's something we can all use. It belongs to humanity. It doesn't belong to Abe. He never asked for a copyright. It belongs to all of us. So he said, all men are created equal. Then he talked about how many people died fighting and how slavery brought to an end through the Emancipation Proclamation. And the participation, by the way, was 250 to 300,000 black Americans given guns for the first time in history, engaging in the war. So he came to near the end of his speech and he said, we have to establish it. Government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish. Well, that idea, that's a very dangerous idea. It's very dangerous for the oligarchs. But that is, when you're in a crisis, that's what it's all about. Of, by, and for the people. I was very happy with Tulsi Gabbard. She quoted that a lot. That isn't something Bernie quoted a lot, but Tulsi did, which is a far more revolutionary doctrine than anything that Bernie was cooking in his little soup kitchen. Now that he's with Biden, now all he does is raise money for Biden, speaks of Biden. Biden and Bernie have a lot in common, and they don't like China. They don't like Cuba. Bernie called Chavez a dead communist when that was his comment about him. So he's not a very bright guy in that way. Probably, maybe very bright. Vicious. Sweet guy. Vicious. Anyway, it's about the people. And Trump and his friends, and frankly Biden and the others, they're all going to go along with the idea, not of conquering, not of breaking the chain of transmission of the virus. They're basically talking about living with it and, footnote, dying with it, because capitalism's got to go on, gentlemen, has to keep going. the Chinese leaders said, well, why did we stop everything? They're the ones who, as they say, took a closed book examination with the coronavirus. They were attacked by a virus that they couldn't figure out what it was. Trump said they should have figured it out in 24 hours, told him. Not that it'd do any good, but should have told him in 24 hours. Meanwhile, here we are, this is May 2020, and U.S. doctors and specialists, disease control people, they haven't figured it out, actually. But China was supposed to figure it out in 24 hours. Anyhow, what did they do when they realized they had a virus that they had never seen before and it seemed to be a killer? They closed down the city of Wuhan, 11 million people in Hubei province. They closed it down because they said people come first. They're a prosperous country. They're a developing country. I mean, prosperous. In the last 10 years, they lifted 600 million people. I'm putting that on the short side. I think it may have been as many as 800 out of poverty. Canada can't even solve the problem of grassy narrows. Grassy narrows are just our permanent mess, no unsolved. So, but they did that. They did it because they defined themselves as the People's Republic. So they said, okay, well, we shut things down. And they took a hit. The economy took a hit. So, as priorities, that's President of Mexico saying, echoing him, until the needs of the poorest are looked after. You don't talk about all the extra stuff. So, and this is where we are. Frankly, I think we should be raising the issue, saying, okay, you want everybody to go back to work. Well, you're going to have to make it a people's government. You have to guarantee us really good wages. And if we do something dangerous, you have to call it hazard pay, and that means double. And you have to have the right to organize. And anything that's essential to the people, and I'd put food in that category, by the way, medicine, care for the elderly, that has to be the people's responsibility, not the province. I just read today Justin Trudeau say, well, that's a job of the provinces. No. We're talking about the people of Canada. I don't care where they are. That's you guys, all of you. The people come first. They don't come after, you know, whatever General Motors tells you or Ma Bell or whoever. No. The people have governments. They form them to protect them and to see that we can lead a human life, human existence. And after the World War II, we now know we have to have racial equality, national equality. That was what the war was about. So all those things are supposed to happen. And so we have to resume what the war was about. We have to go back to seeing to it and what Roosevelt called the four freedoms, which included, you know, the right to food, right to medicine, the right to survive. And we have to have the old idea that it's all of us or none. You don't get to have, the place doesn't get to belong to the oligarchs and to the monopolies. Take them over. The people should take them, put them in the hands of those who are responsible to us. How in the world are you supposed to, you can't go and say, oh, we'd like to have a medical system, and the government says, well, you have to ask him because he owns that. Oh, somebody goes to prison in the United States, they say, well, you know, that's, he's in a private prison. Private, now in the private prisons, people are dying and put at risk. And somebody said, well, what can I do about it? Well, you have to talk to the company. No. See, this is the country of everybody. We make the decisions, not these private guys. That's what the concept of about a people have to mean. And so this is, I'll remind you, Taylor Report, and coming to the end of this segment, and I'll just say again, the whole point, the whole object for us at this moment is to not permit a Cold War. Not to say we don't want it and nobody's argued for it and we're not going to have it. And we're going to end these criminal sanctions against poor countries. And we're not going to follow Trump and Five Eyes. This is CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor.
It's that time again. Love your radio. Please support the sound and news of your city, heard each and every day on CIUT 89.5 FM. We are your voice and your radio station. Visit CIUT.fm and donate now. Thank you in advance for your financial support.
CIUT 89.5, Toronto.